We're now going to talk about approaching the prospect. We know that this is one of the areas where we have the greatest number of hang-ups. So I'd like to give you some key points in the initial approach. Once we've done our creative thinking, our creative analysis, we've identified our major competitive advantages, and now we have to go out and actually confront face-to-face or telephone call to telephone call a real live person who has never seen us before in our life. One of the most fearsome parts of all of selling until we get it down pat. An ongoing analysis of your product and market will give you a continuous stream of new products and prospect groups to call on. Remember, most sales calls end with a no because people are either busy, they're preoccupied, or they're initially disinterested. And your first contact with the prospect will begin the process which will or will not conclude with a sale. Therefore, every word of your approach or introduction must be planned in advance to accomplish the following. Number one, it must break the preoccupation of the prospect. Every single person, by the way, is preoccupied. We are completely involved in our own problems, our own world, our own health, our own family, our own business, our own bills. And there's a very good book that was written some years ago called Preoccupation Breaking. And what it simply said is this, is that unless you break the preoccupation of the prospect, you never get to first base in making a presentation. Many people start off their sales presentation while the other person is still on the phone, still signing checks, still shuffling papers, and their mind is 1,000 miles away. And your first job is to smash that preoccupation. And I like you to think of it in terms of throwing a brick through a plate glass window. Just think of it, we want to crash through a plate glass window to get that preoccupation broken. Let me give you an example of one of the most successful preoccupation breaking approaches ever used. It was developed by a salesman at Corning Glass. The year that Corning Glass came out with safety glass. And he went out throughout the country and he became the top selling salesman of safety glass for Corning Glass in North America. And at the National Sales Convention, he was given a big prize and an award. And they said, please tell us your secret. How is it that you sold so much more than everybody else? He said, it's very simple. He said, first of all, I got some pieces of safety glass cut into 6-inch by 6-inch pieces as samples. And I got a ball peen hammer. And then I walk in on the prospect and I say, you'd like to see a piece of glass that doesn't shatter. And the guy says, I don't believe it. I put the glass on the counter and I go whack and hit it. And he protect his eyes. He said, geez. And he looked back down. He said, holy smokes, that's incredible. And I'd say, how much would you like? And I'd pull out my order pad and start writing. Well, Corning Glass was so impressed with this that they bought all of their salespeople ball peen hammers and sample sheets of glass and sent them out. And they sold glass by the carload. The end of the year, next National Sales Convention, this salesman was still head and shoulders above every other salesman in the country. They brought him back again. They said, what on earth have you done differently? Because we've done exactly what you did last year. He said, well, I knew you were going to steal my method, so I knew I had to come up with something more original. Now, what I do is this. I go in to see the purchaser, and I've got a ball peen hammer in one hand and the glass in the other. I say, would you like to see a piece of glass that doesn't shatter? He says, I don't believe it. I put the glass on the desk, and I give him the hammer. I have him hit it. And if you don't think that convinces him, got another thing coming. He says, then I write up the order. You see, a good opening, a good strong question aimed at the result or benefit of your product gets you almost all the way to the close. It gets the person alert, it breaks their preoccupation, they give you their complete attention, and they're willing to listen to you. You only have 30 seconds at the beginning of the approach to get the person's complete attention. In the first 30 seconds, the person decides whether or not they're going to listen to you. If you waffle, or if you're just friendly, or if you're easygoing, or if you hope that they've got some time to talk to you, within 30 seconds, they've turned you off and tuned out. So your opening question has to be planned word for word, rehearsed in front of a mirror, memorized and practiced over and over again. Then you have to go out and try it on real life prospects and see what sort of response you get. Let me give you an example. I used to sell sales training, motivational training. And I would call up somebody and I'd say, I'd like to talk to you about training your salespeople. They'd say, no, sorry, thank you. I can't afford it. We don't have the time. We're all busy. We've got all the training in the world. They've all been trained. They don't need training. Sales are down. Business is bad. We don't have any cash. Our budget is shot. Same things that they tell us all the time. So I found that I wasn't getting anywhere with that approach. And I sat down and I looked at it. I spent several days, as a matter of fact, working and reworking and trying to think, how could I approach organizations with salespeople more effectively? And I came to an interesting conclusion. I said, what is the basic need of the person who determines whether or not there will be sales training offered in the company? Well, the person is usually the sales manager or the company owner, and his basic concern is increased sales, right? So I said, why don't I ask a question that focuses on that specific need? And I wrote out a question, and I started calling people for appointments. And my question was simply this. I'd ask the receptionist, who's in charge of sales training in your organization? Well, that would be Mr. So-and-so. So I'd get the name, and I'd get transferred to Mr. So-and-so, and I'd say, Mr. Smith, my name is Brian Tracy, and I'm with the Institute for Executive Development. And I wonder if you would be interested in a proven method that can increase your sales by 20 to 30% over the next 12 months. What kind of responses do you think I got? Every single one of them said, what is it? How does it work? When can you come in and see me? Because every single one of them was concerned about sales. Your opening question must answer this question. Why should I listen to you? When you have an approach question, it should answer the question, why should I listen to you? My question was, this is why you should listen to me, because I can increase your sales by 20 to 30% over the next 12 months. The next question, which should be generated by your opening question, is, what is it? Your opening remark should cause the person to say, what have you got? What is it? If it doesn't generate that response, then it's not a good enough question. It's not breaking the person's preoccupation. If the person says, well, I'm really not interested, it means that your opening question is not emphatic enough. It's not aimed at something that the customer wants. It's amazing how many people introduce themselves and their company and their product line and how long they've been in town, none of which is of any interest to the customer. And finally, the customer says, well, I'm really not interested. Thank you very much. So what you do is you drop everything and you focus solely on the key benefit that you think that person wants to enjoy. You're selling microcomputer products. You walk in. You don't say, do you currently have a computer? Are you interested in a computer? You say, how would you like to save $1,000 a month on your administrative costs? What's the answer to that question? What is it? That's right. How do I do it? For that, I'm willing to listen to you for a few seconds. Now, you may have something and you may not, but for that kind of a benefit, I'm willing to give you a couple of minutes. You've got my attention, sir. You see, and this is the importance of the question. As I say, 95% of people wing it, and they can't understand why they're so frustrated in their telephone and in their personal presentations. So moving on, your first selling job is to get the person to listen to you. And before the prospect will relax and listen to you, he wants to be sure of five things. He wants to be sure that you have something important to communicate. That's why you hint at the result or benefit in your first sentence. The second thing is he wants to make sure that you're talking to the right buyer. Now, you should have qualified by going through the receptionist or someone else to make sure you're talking to the right person. And if you have any doubts at all, ask them, are you the person that I would talk to about increasing sales in your organization? Are you the person that I would talk to about cutting costs of administration? Are you the person that I would talk to with regard to this particular benefit within the organization? And the person will say, yes, I am, or no, I'm not. But by all means, be sure you're talking to the right person. There's no point in doing a wonderful sales presentation to somebody who's not in a position to make a buying decision. You also want to be assured that your visit will be short. People are terribly busy today, and they become very, very uptight and nervous if they think somebody's going to take up a lot of their time. So you must assure them very early that you're only going to take up a couple of minutes to tell them about this benefit that you've suggested. They want to be sure that they will be placed under no obligation and that you will not use high pressure. So you have to do everything right at the beginning of the talk. And let me give you my method for doing this, which I've taught now to thousands of people, and they've tried it, and they have found that it has completely turned their effectiveness in getting appointments around, either by telephone or cold calling. It's very simply this. You ask a well-structured question, an imaginative question aimed at the benefit. Remember, when you have asked a question, the natural, habitual, conditioned response is that the person must answer your question before they say anything else. If you ask a person, what time is it, before they can say anything else, they are conditioned to respond and tell you what time it is. If you ask a person, may I ask you a question? Almost invariably, the person will say, yes. When you say, would you like to hear a proven method whereby you could increase your sales by 20 to 30% per year, the person has to think about that question before they can say anything else and give you an answer. I only had one person tell me no, by the way. No, I'm not interested. And the reason they weren't interested is that the receivers had just come in and closed the company down. And he said on the phone, he said, it's too late for us. I wish you'd called me 6 months ago. But every other sales manager I ever spoke to with that question said, yes, I'm interested. When would you like to come in and talk? So the next question is simply this, is be polite and respectful and say, I would just need about 10 minutes of your time to show you what I've got and you can judge for yourself. That's very important because there's a lot of natural sales resistance, especially making a telephone appointment. The person's very resistant. They'll say, well, what is it? Can you tell me what it is? You say, Mr. Prospect, I would like to tell you what it is, but I have something I have to show you. And it'll just take me about 10 minutes And then you can judge for yourself. You can decide for yourself whether or not it's the sort of thing that you're looking for. It's very important that you repeat this two or three times. You can judge for yourself. You be the judge. You decide for yourself. I just want to show you something that hundreds of other companies are using that are very happy with it. We're having tremendous success. You take a look at it. It'll take you 10 minutes and you can decide for yourself. You've got to get that message across on the telephone. If you do that, you'll be all right. You see, anybody can give you 10 minutes. They can't give you half an hour before the month after next, but they can give you 10 minutes right away if you've got something that's of interest to them. So you say, you be the judge, I just need 10 minutes of your time. And then say, would tomorrow afternoon or the next morning be satisfactory? Or how about sometime today? Don't make the mistake of doing what many people do, saying, how about 10:30 this morning or 11:20 tomorrow morning? You don't give them choice of one time or another. You choose odd times. This is called the insurance company method of getting appointments. And everybody's heard it so many times that just the sound of it on the telephone turns them off, even if they're interested in your proposal. Just say, would you have 10 minutes free somewhere around 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon? If the person says no, you say, well, how about in the morning or how about the morning after that? But keep asking, how about the morning after that? How about the Monday after that? Keep asking until the person says, well, yes, you could come in around 10 or about 9:30 or whatever it happens to be. Just ask insistently for a time. Now, one of the things that happens here, which you must be very careful about in the approach, if the person has said, yes, well, I'm interested, I'm curious, I'd like to know what it is, I'd like to put aside 10 minutes, you have something you have to show me, in other words, you can't tell me what it is over the phone, all right, and then they'll say, well, why don't you call me next Monday and we'll set a time. You ever had this? Whenever they say that, say, look, I have my date book right here. Is yours handy? Now, you know theirs is handy because it's right there on their desk. You say, why don't we set a time right now? Now, every time somebody has ever done that to me over the phone, I just smile because I think that is so excellent. It's so professional to say, look, I've got my day timer right here. Is yours handy? Why don't we set a time right now? And they'll always say, why, sure, why not? And they'll set a time right then. Don't ever allow them to put you off until calling next Monday morning because then you're into the same darn thing again. Set a time. Say, how about 9:30, 7:45, 5:15, whatever it happens to be. Any time that's convenient for them, and then be there on time. And one final point is before you go off for an appointment which you've scheduled a day or 2 days or more in advance, always call and confirm. Always call and confirm, because it's astonishing how many of our appointments fall through for no reason at all but that the person gets called into a meeting or out of town or out in an emergency. Always call and confirm before you go. And if you call and confirm, the person says, geez, I forgot all about it. I'm sorry. I've got this other meeting that's come up. Well, let's schedule another time right now. Remember, the most important thing you do in telephone selling, in getting your appointments on the phone, is to get that first appointment and get it firmly scheduled and to get it confirmed so that you go and see the person. Once you've had an opportunity with a prearranged appointment to sit down person to person, face to face, and identify the needs of the individual, you're a lot further along than if you're just on the other end of the phone. So do everything humanly possible and be insistent, polite, firm, friendly, smile into the phone. It's very important. You can feel a smile on the other end of the phone. You can also feel a frown or an intent look or anxiety or tension. You can feel it on the phone. So smile. If necessary, put a mirror up on your desk and smile into the mirror. As they say, an insincere smile on the phone is better than a sincere frown. So look into the mirror, smile, and keep insisting until you get that time so you can go and sit face to face. Never sell your product on the phone. Never try to sell your proposition. Never describe it. One of the greatest things that you have going for you when you say, I have something I must show you, something you're going to find very interesting, something's very profitable. When you say that, one of the greatest things you have going for you is curiosity. People are enormously curious. I had a person call me about financial services not long ago, and he left me with this, I have an original financial plan for you that I like to talk to you about when you get a chance toward the end of the year, and I'll call you and I'll get back to you. Now, the salesman never did get back to me, and I'm still curious about that financial plan. I'm still curious about that innovative approach to investment that the person has got, but they never called me back. Very, very important. You must be insistent. You must maintain the initiative. Don't ever expect people to call you back. You, as the salesman, must maintain the initiative continually until you get the first face-to-face appointment. And finally, never, never, never mail information if you can possibly avoid it. Brochures, information, material is to be left, not sent. That's the basic rule. If a person says to you, well, can you send me some stuff in the mail? Do you know what they're telling you in most cases? Is, can I get rid of you this easily? That's all they're telling you. And you know how you can test if they're interested? Some people say, well, look, I'm going out of town or I'm going to be tied up. Can you send me some stuff in the mail? What you say is, look, I understand how busy you are. I'll tell you what. I'll be going past your office later on today or tomorrow morning. I'll drop it off personally. Will you be there? This is how you can tell if the person's interested. If they say, no, don't do that. No, just drop it. Don't just put it in the mail. What they're telling you is, I'm not interested. I'm just trying to encourage you to waste a stamp and some literature and take it from your office so I can throw it in the wastebasket in my office. And that's basically what they do. If the person says, well, yes, if you're going by, I'll be here, by all means, drop it off. Then they're interested. Then you drop it off in person. But don't mail it. Has anybody here ever been in the situation where they've mailed the stuff and they thought, boy, now it should be there. The person's going to get it. They're going to read. Oh, are they going to be excited because they really asked me to send it? And you call them up and they don't know what you're talking about. They know that they're not telling you the truth. They say, yeah, it's here somewhere. I'm sure it's, oh, yes, yeah, it's under something here. But tell me what it was again. You had that? We've all had that. Don't go into that. Unprofessional salespeople do this for what reason? To avoid the possibility of being personally rejected. Every single thing that we do to avoid the possibility of being personally told no is a waste of our time and will never lead to a sale. Remember that. Most of the efforts that salespeople engage in are to avoid coming face to face with a real life prospect that can tell them no. So nail down the appointment. Be aggressive, but be polite. Now, prior to a sales call, and by the way, before you get off the phone, you thank him very much and you reconfirm the time and date. 40 or 50% of the time, the person will have written it down in the wrong date, right there on the phone. You say, Tuesday, May 14th at 3 o'clock, right? Right. So he's got it down solid. Thank you very much for your time. I'm looking forward to seeing you. You are really going to be happy with what I have to show you. In other words, build expectancy. Cause the person to be interested. The last thing you leave them thinking is something really interesting that you're going to show them. Then when you go to the appointment, you go in to see the person. This is perhaps the most important of all. And many top salespeople will tell you that they do this, but many of them keep it a professional secret. Is that before you go in, what you do is you stop for a few seconds and you get a clear mental picture of yourself completely relaxed, calm, positive, smiling, in complete control of the interview. You breathe in, you exhale, you just see yourself as a beautiful, smoothly prepared professional representative going in, and you see a picture in your mind of the prospect responding to you positively, and you think of your last successful sales call and sales close, and you think of that and let that be the last picture you put into your subconscious before you go in to see this new prospect. And you'll be surprised. It'll smooth out your whole personality. And if you're a little bit tense, you say, I like myself. I'm a great salesman. You just say that, or saleswoman, you say it very, very strongly. You really say it as though you're trying to impress somebody at 100 yards. And you'll do that, and you'll be surprised. You'll feel good. You'll almost be laughing at yourself. A salesman that comes in with a smile just disappearing from their face because they feel so good about themselves has a tremendous immediate positive impact on the client. Never go into a sales presentation without preparing yourself with visualization in advance. It'll make all the difference in the world. Once you get in there and you shake hands firmly, you say, thank you very much for your time. You are really going to enjoy what I've got to show you. Because we know that if you build positive expectancy, get them interested, get them curious, get them saying to themselves, I wonder what it is. And if you're smiling and you're confident and you're positive and you say, boy, you're really going to enjoy this. This is really neat. I'm really glad you had the time. I'm really looking forward to showing you what I've got. They're saying to themselves, I can hardly wait. It's been a lousy morning. It's been nothing but telephone messages and memos and complaints, and the coffee's been cold and the bills and the suppliers and everything else. Thank heavens, here's a nice, pleasant, intelligent, positive-looking person who's got something interesting to tell me. Believe me, many people feel this way. And if you're pleasant and smiling, they'll be happy to see you. Then you go in, refuse to make your presentation standing up. Never, never, never make your presentation standing up. Because if you do, you run the risk of devaluing your product. Nobody considers a product of any value if you're willing to sell it standing up, unless you sell in a showroom. If you're going to see a person, they come out and they say, well, can you tell me what it's about? You say, what I have to show you is really very important and I need about 10 minutes of your time. And if you don't have the time now, perhaps we could schedule 10 minutes at a later date when it would be more convenient. But refuse to sell standing up, because what it does is it just cheapens your product. Very, very important. Many people forget this. The basic rule is this. If the person cannot buy your product standing up, don't try to sell it standing up. If they cannot purchase it over the phone, don't try to sell it over the phone. If they can't purchase it through the mail, don't try to sell it through the mail. If it requires your being there in order to sell the product, then make darn good and sure that that's the way you do it. And people don't make buying decisions standing up. They make buying decisions sitting down in their comfort zone, in their office or their home, listening, considering, reflecting, looking at your material, and evaluating and reviewing and deciding whether the benefits are worth the price. Let's talk about the power of suggestion. The suggestive influence of a calm, confident, relaxed salesperson is very, very powerful. As you know, the most professional salespeople are those who are the most relaxed. They're the most calm, they're the most easygoing, they're usually well-dressed, well-groomed, and they have a soothing effect on us. They exude confidence in themselves and their product, and therefore we feel confident about listening to them, we feel confident about the things they say, and we feel confident about their product or service. We know that we are very strongly influenced by our environment. As human beings, our environment has a tremendous impact on how we act and react. For instance, here, the temperature in this room is about 70 degrees. If you raised this temperature 5 degrees or lowered it 5 degrees, it would dramatically change the amount of attention that you could give this course, your level of comfort, your level of anger, your irritation, and so on and so forth. We also know that in our suggestive environment, one of the most powerful influences is the people that we deal with, that we are very, very strongly influenced by the way people respond to us, by the way people are when we're around them. Everyone here has had the experience of meeting a person and having an instantly negative reaction or an instantly positive reaction before a word has been exchanged. Isn't that true? We respond subconsciously to other people. So therefore, everything that we do prior to the sales presentation and everything about us in the sales presentation either increases the possibility of making a sale by creating a positive suggestive environment or decreases the possibility. One of the things which I'll point out is that in 50% of cases, lighting a cigarette will lose you the sale, for the simple reason that at least 50% of people today don't smoke and are offended by those who do. Many people don't realize that. And it's very, very important. So let's talk about some of the powerful suggestive influences. The first three key are appearance, how you look, your overall appearance, your voice, what your voice sounds like, and your attitude. Now, if your appearance is appropriate, your voice is loud and clear, as opposed to being low or shy or retiring, and your attitude is calm and positive, all three of which you can strongly affect, at least the second two, you can strongly affect by doing the visualization in advance, clearly preparing your mind, seeing yourself as a success, that will affect your voice and that will affect your posture and everything else. It's very important with your attitude should be positive, confident, and outgoing, and your dress should always be the best and most appropriate possible. I strongly suggest that men read Dress for Success by John T. Malloy, one of the best books on the subject. If you haven't read it and you're trying to make a living in sales, you are really hurting yourself, because that book is one of the finest that's ever been written on the impact that our clothing has on the decisions people make about us. There are several books on the book racks for ladies' Dress for Success. There's one by John T. Malloy, but from everything I've heard, I suggest that you not read it, that there are others that are better written by women. I've had several women who read it, I just pass that on to you. Friendliness is very important. Remember, people like to deal with people who they feel friendly toward, with one exception, that women should not smile at the beginning of a sales interview. That if women smile at the beginning of a sales interview, they run the risk of not being taken seriously. They should be friendly, they should be straightforward, they should be firm, but they should not smile. Men smile and shake hands and they're pleasant and they say something funny, and this is the way men are expected to interact with each other. But ladies should be serious, should be friendly, should be warm, but they should not smile until 5 or 10 minutes into the presentation. This comes out of some recent research, and it's a very important thing to know. Grooming. Every salesperson should be well-groomed. I've given this advice to so many people, I'm astonished at how much I have to beat people with this. If the people in your industry have short hair, you better have short hair or go and sell to somebody else, because we feel uneasy. It moves us out of our comfort zone to deal with people who are too different from ourselves. We feel comfortable with people who dress like ourselves, who's groomed like ourselves, who talk the way we do, and so on. And I have a friend whose business career in the last 2 or 3 years I followed very closely. When I first met him, he had long, shaggy hair over the back of his collar. Like, he looked like a dog. You wanted to pet him, as a matter of fact. And I told him, I said, if you want to be successful in selling, you're going to have to cut your hair. Well, he insisted that that was not true, that people could like him for his own personality, that they should take him for what he was, and that part of his personality was his hair. And he struggled month after month after month. He pounded his knuckles raw trying to make a living selling. He finally went and cut his hair. He went through courses that I've given about 3 or 4 times. Finally, he got the message. He went and cut his hair. As his hairline went up, his income went up. He said, aha, I've made it. He started letting his hair grow again. His hair went down, his income went down. And so now when you see him, he's got his hair very nicely groomed, cut short, and he's doing very good business. He now has two or three people working for him, as a matter of fact, whereas before he couldn't even afford to pay his bills. Small thing, but it makes a big difference. Product should always be clean and presented in its best possible light, because people are very influenced by the suggestive impact of a product that is clean, neat, efficient, attractive, colorful. They're also influenced by a product or a product brochure that's dirty, dusty, dingy, got coffee stains on it, folded over, spilled, and so on. So always use the best material possible. Your surroundings, especially when they come into your office, should be neat, clean, orderly, and looking like success and prosperity. I read a book by a man who'd made several million dollars, and he said one of the key rules of success in his organizations was always keep your desk clean. People have a lot of trouble with that, but especially in sales and entrepreneurial organizations, we find that if we have too many things on our desk, we are always being distracted. It makes us incapable of concentrating on one thing at a time when our desk is covered with things. So keep your desk clean and neat. You should only have what you're working on your desk. One of the key time management rules is have one thing on your desk at a time. That's the thing you're working on at that time. Even if you have to take everything off your desk and put it on the floor in a stack and pick up one thing at a time. Presentation should be well organized, practiced, and complete with all details. Surprisingly enough, as much as 80% of the value of your product or service in the mind of the prospect will be contained in the quality of your presentation. If your presentation is random and wandering, the prospect will consider your product or service to be inefficient and incompetent. If your presentation is crisp and well organized and goes step by step in a logical development to a logical conclusion, they will think that your product or service is the same way. That's why when you go in to see a doctor, or you go in to see a dentist, or you go in to see a lawyer or an accountant, they don't just start off the wall talking to you. They have a series of questions, a series of pieces of information that they take, one after another in a very systematic order. And the more they ask you systematic, logical questions and take it down, the more confident you feel in their competence. So that's important. That's why we're talking about presentation. Body language. Body language is very important because why? Well, for the same reason that clothing is important, because clothing covers 95% of our body, so 95% of the first impression we make is going to be our clothes. Body language is important because 80 to 90% of all our communication with other people is nonverbal. It's not contained in the words that we say, it's the way we say them. It's the tone of voice, it's the gestures, it's the eyes, it's the set of the face. That's why a person-to-person contact, knee-to-knee and head-to-head, as the Japanese say, that person-to-person contact is worth far more than any telephone contact, because you can see all the nuances. You can see the person. You can see how they're thinking and feeling and reacting. You can see the eyes and the body language. So therefore, always stand erect. The best posture in selling, standing up as though there was a string and the string was holding your head up so that your body is completely straight, so your spine is completely straight. Sitting down, you should always keep your back erect sitting. Never fold your arms when you're talking to people, because it means that you're closing them out in many cases. And if a person has their arms folded, it's very important that you do something to get those arms unfolded. And one of the best things to get their arms unfolded is to hand them something that they have to take with two hands. Say, by the way, take a look at this, and hand it to them. They have to reach out with two hands. We find that if a person unfolds their arms, they unfold their mind simultaneously. If a person's arms are folded, their mind is folded. Very, very important. So don't sit there with your arms folded, crossing your legs. What does cross legs mean? Cross legs usually mean that you're holding back information. Cross legs at the ankle means that. Cross legs over the knee means that you're holding back information. Some people sit like that because it's comfortable, but just be aware that cross legs is a bodily sign that denotes holding back, if you like, or constraint. Your best body language is leaning slightly forward, attentively, watching the prospect, listening carefully to what the person is saying, nodding and smiling, nodding and listening, because it's very, very hard for a person to resist a person who is listening to them closely and nodding and smiling and is obviously interested in what they have to say. And as you know, if your prospect will talk long enough, they'll probably tell you what you need to know to be able to structure your offering so that they'll buy it. So that the more you can lean forward, the more attentive you are, the more you listen, the more you nod, the more you smile, keep your back straight, never lean against the back of a chair. Why is that? Well, because when you're leaning against the back of the chair, you're slouching. We find that there is a psychological process in selling, or in all human relationships, called mirroring. And mirroring means that whatever you do on an ongoing basis, other people start to do too. that people will begin to mirror your behaviors. If you lean back in a chair and slouch comfortably, the other person will lean back and slouch comfortably, and a slouched back, lean back, relaxed prospect is not going to make a buying decision. If you lean forward attentively, put one hand on the desk, pay close attention to what the person is saying, smile and nod and listen and ask questions, the other person will lean forward also. Very important. And body language can be as much as 60-70% of the communication. We always believe what a person does more than what a person says. And if there is variance between what the person is saying and what they're doing, we'll always believe what they're doing. As they say, have you ever heard of a person who smiles only with their mouth? The eyes don't smile? Now, what happens when you see a smile like that? You feel like the canary in the cage looking at the cat, don't you? That's why body language is so important. That's why, by the way, the more you like yourself, the more goal-oriented you are, the more motivated, the more you're selling a product that you believe in, the more animated and positive and enthusiastic your body language is, the greater the impact that you have on the subconscious mind of the customer. Noise, always try to minimize the noise in the selling environment. If the person is coming into your place of business, try to make sure that there are no interruptions. If you're going to the other person's place of business, try to suggest that we sit down quietly where we can't be interrupted for 5 or 10 minutes. Sometimes if you'll ask the prospect, say, I just need 10 minutes. Is there somewhere where we could sit where we won't be interrupted? Very often the prospect will say, well, sure, why don't we go over here? They'll do it. And not only that, when they get into the habit of responding to your reasonable requests, they'll eventually start responding to your other reasonable requests, like buying the product. Positioning is very important. I always try to position myself so that I'm sitting to the left of the prospect. If you're left-handed, then you should sit to the right of the prospect. But there is sort of an uneasiness about having somebody on our right hand. I think it goes back many, many years into our history where the right hand was the sword hand. We don't like people to be on our right hand, but we do like them on the left. And if you're sitting to the left of the prospect, have the person's wife or partner sit to the right of them so that you can talk to both of them and make eye contact with both of them, and they have difficulty making direct eye contact with you. Try to avoid barriers like tables and chairs. One point, when you're selling in a person's home, it's very important that you do not make your presentation in the living room. And the reason for that is that couples, families, do not make business decisions or important family decisions in the living room. It's out of their comfort zone. They make them at the kitchen or dining room table. That's where they talk business. So although you'll be invited to sit in the living room, what you say is, why don't we sit at the kitchen table where we would be more comfortable? The person who you're talking to will be more than willing to say, sure, why not? Because that's where they feel more comfortable too. When you get to the kitchen or dining room table, have them show you where to sit. Because you don't want to sit in Mama Bear's chair and you don't want to sit in Papa Bear's chair. Again, if you do, the other person will be uncomfortable. They will feel that their space has been violated. It's a small thing, but nobody ever buys anything or makes a serious business decision sitting in the living room, or very, very seldom, let's put it that way. And finally, with regard to etiquette, always be extremely polite. Always be extremely courteous. Be extremely considerate with prospects and their wives, their employees, their partners, their receptionists. Be known as the person that when you leave, people say, what a nice person that person was. What a gentleman, or what a lady, or how nice that person was. Because very often we find salespeople make the mistake of being kind of indifferent toward the receptionist or the secretary, and then later on they find they can't ever get back in again. Always treat everybody as though they were special. One of the basic rules of selling is to treat everybody like a million-dollar client, like a million-dollar prospect, and you'll never go wrong.